with a Geiger counter in my hand.
I'm going out to stake me some government land.
Uranium fever has got and got me down.
Hello, I'm Micah. This is Book It, and you're listening to KDVS Davis 90.3 FM. The following views presented in this half hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. Like I said, this is Book It. Yippee, yippee. Crowd cheer. We need like a crowd cheering sound effect. Let me see if I can find that really quickly. I don't think we do. We have Vine Boom. We got Pikmin sounds. That'll be our cheering for today. Woo, Pikmin! Okay, anyways. Today, our book is Kitchen by Banana Yoshimoto. If you've never listened to Book It, every single show, we're bi-weekly this quarter. We talk about a different book. This quarter, I'm going to be talking about all books, or like all the books I'm going to be talking about were written by women and usually are going to be about women. And things that relate to womanhood, like motherhood, things like that. But yeah, today, Kitchen by Banana Yoshimoto. I really, really love Banana Yoshimoto. I've only read two of her books, but I intend on getting more of her books, soon. I really enjoy her writing. I think she's a great, great author. I know she's become incredibly popular, especially in Japan. A lot of people call her and Meiko Kawakami, Japan, like the female Murakamis, if you know Haruki Murakami, super famous author, more famous in the West than he is in Japan, I would say, like, or more popular in the West than he is in Japan, more English speakers love Murakami. I used to really, really love Murakami when I was younger, but as I've gotten older, I've realized like the way he writes women is not great. It's really bad, actually. But if you ignore that, the rest of the stories are really interesting. But yeah, Banana Yoshimoto, one of the most popular, female authors in Japan, along with, like I mentioned, Miyako Kawakami, who we've read multiple times on this show. But I really, really enjoy her work. She's really interesting. Her sister's a famous manga artist in Japan. I do not remember her name, but I was reading about that. So it's really interesting. She even mentions on her website that like her sister kind of inspired her to become a writer, because her sister was such a good artist that like it inspired her to like do what she loved too. And I think that's really awesome. I really, like I said before, I really, really love Banana Yoshimoto. So this might be a very biased show today. But I was reading like on her FAQ site, not on her FAQ site. She has a site. I think it's just but yoshimotobanana.com. And there's an FAQ. And it's really, really interesting. There's really crazy questions. There's a question that somebody asked about cheating on, dating a married man. And she's like, it's really funny. Her favorite color is orange, apparently. And she loves mango. And she would like to visit Mexico, which I think is awesome. And she also wrote, she says, I would like to deepen what I write now, and I want to write in the more easy to read style. And I agree. I think Banana Yoshimoto does a great job of writing in an easy to read way, while still having like really complex ideas and like a crazy storyline that goes on. And Banana Yoshimoto, a lot of her books kind of focus on like death, and like loneliness and women, as happens in Kitchen, which I'll talk about in a minute. And so somebody asked her, is there any particular reason why there are often deaths described in your novels? And she said, death attracts me the most as a big motif for a writer to investigate for life. But yeah, this is my go. I love Banana Yoshimoto. We've talked about Dead End Memories, her other book, which was a collection of short stories. I really enjoyed that too. But today, Kitchen is kind of split into two stories. The first one being Kitchen, the same title as the book. The second one is a lot shorter. Like, I think it's only like 20 pages at the very end of like Kitchen. That's called Moonlight Shadow. And that one's often not talked about online. I feel like most people just focus on Kitchen, the first half of the book, or like the first like 80% of the book, I would say. But it's a really, really interesting story. Okay, so Kitchen is focusing on our main character named Mikage. And Mikage, her grandmother has just died. And we find out soon that her parents also died when she was very young, and her grandfather has died like a couple years before this. So she's basically lost like all of her family at this point. And so in the beginning of the book, it talks about her like grieving her grandmother, and she feels extremely lonely and that she has nobody. And she can't sleep. So she can't sleep, and she ends up finding comfort in her kitchen, her grandmother's kitchen, because she lived with her grandmother. And it ends up being the only place where she can sleep. So she begins sleeping in the kitchen every night, for like comfort. And one day, somebody knocks on the door, and she answers, and it's Yuichi. And Yuichi works at like this flower shop that Mikage's grandmother would often visit. I think she says that she would go there like every day or every other day and get flowers all the time. And so her and Yuichi, by her I'm referring to Mikage's grandmother, her and Yuichi kind of have like a nice relationship. Yuichi is obviously very young. He's the same age as Mikage. But you know, they see each other all the time. She's like a sweet older grandmother to him. A very kind lady. And so he goes and he talks to Mikage, and Mikage is obviously very like going through it. You can tell by the way they describe like how she looks and like what she's wearing. And Yuichi, like standing in the door, he invites her to come stay with him and his mother. And so she, at first she kind of thinks it's a little weird, like, should I really do this? But she ends up going, with Yuichi to his apartment. And she ends up staying there, and she ends up meeting his mother too. Her name is Eriko. Now Yuichi's mother is a very interesting character. Like I said, her name's Eriko, but we find out that in the book that his mother is trans. So she transitioned to a woman, and she also owns a gay bar. And it's I kind of enjoyed how Banana Yoshimoto mentions this. It's not as if it's something crazy or weird. She talks about like it's very normal, which it is, but we often don't see that a lot in like literature, I feel like. So it's very nice to have an openly trans character, and like the LGBT representation in the book is very interesting and nice. And we find out that Eriko transitioned after her wife, who is Yuichi's birth mother, died. And I also enjoyed it in the book. There's kind of like a little section where it talks about how Eriko felt and like why she chose to transition. She talks about how she always felt that she was a woman and things like that. And it's really interesting. But yeah, she ends up moving in with them and staying with them. And instead of paying rent, she begins to cook for them. So she will cook them dinners and breakfasts and stuff. And it's really interesting in their kitchen, like in the beginning of the book, she again finds solace and like comfort in being in the kitchen. At this time, she's also sleeping on their couch, not in another room or anything, so she can be closer to the kitchen. Because that's the only way she can sleep is she's by the kitchen. And so as Mikage is, like, staying with them, they all kind of grow a close bond, obviously, because they're living together. She's making meals for them. And it's very sweet. And she's learning how to cook as this is, like, as she's staying there with them. And as she's, like, cooking for them, this kind of starts to heal her in a way. And instead of, like, being sad and, like, being filled with grief and stuff, the food that she's making for Yuichi and Eriko brings her a lot of comfort and love and nourishment. And so she begins to heal from her grief. And she ends up... There's kind of, like, a time skip in the book where this happens, but she ends up kind of moving out. And it fast forwards to her, like, at her new job. We find out that she ended up going to culinary school, and she found that cooking was her passion. And through cooking, like I said, it basically gave her a new life. So we fast forward, she's become a cooking master, basically. Like, she's working with working in the kitchens, making awesome things. And so one day she's at home and she gets a phone call, and she answers, of course, and it's Yuichi. And she hasn't talked to Yuichi, she says, like, in a while, like, a couple months. And so this is, like, the first time she's spoken to him in a while. And he calls her, and she can tell immediately that obviously there's something wrong. And Yuichi informs her that Eriko has died the month prior. And he explains on the phone that he could not bring himself to tell her. She also finds out that her funeral has already happened, and so she missed that. But Yuichi just talks about how, like I said, he couldn't bring himself to tell Mikage that Eriko had died. And he is, like, very, obviously very, very upset. Mikage can tell through the phone, and so she tells him, "I'm coming over." And so she immediately grabs all of her things, and she goes, like, she makes an overnight bag, stuff like that, and she goes and meets him there, like, at his place, and she talks to him, and it's very, very sad. Like, his mother just died. That was, like, his only parent for a long time. After his birth mother died, Eriko's the one who raised him, like, for the rest of his life. The way Eriko dies is extremely sad as well. What happens is that she's at the bar that she owns, and a man had become obsessed with her, and she obviously, she didn't really like him, and she was, like, making it known, but it got to a point where, like, I think she ends up, like, kicking him out of the bar or something, and then a little while later, he comes back, and he ends up stabbing her, I think, multiple times, but Eriko, like, she fights him off, and she ends up, like, beating him up after she's been stabbed or whatever, and basically, like, kind of saving everybody else, but she dies from her wounds. And it's really, really sad. And her bar ends up going to, one of her friends whose name I cannot remember right now. And that friend will be important in a minute. So she goes over to Yuichi's apartment, and she talks to him, and he's obviously really, like, still grieving. And he's very, very sad. And so she does what she does best, and she starts to cook for him. She cooks for him like a crazy amount of food. She cooks, like, everything she knows he likes, and so she makes this huge, huge spread of food for him, because cooking, like, her cooking for him is her trying to mend his wounds the same way that she did her own, because that's what worked for her, was cooking, and that's all that she knows, and it kind of sort of works a little bit, but he's obviously very sad and things like that. But she ends up having to go to a work event. And so she goes to this work event for a couple nights. And on one of the nights, she's... Oh, let me go back a little bit. Her and Yuichi, she describes herself kind of being in love with him. They've obviously formed this very deep connection. Something that's kind of, she describes, as unbreakable, through their grief together. And it's very interesting. One day she's at work, and this girl comes up to her and kind of, like, starts to yell at her, and it seems that she's in love with Yuichi, and she thinks that, I guess like Mikage is trying to steal her, but Mikage doesn't know this girl, and so this kind of disturbs her a little bit. And that's when she really starts to realize that she really, really does love Yuichi. She just doesn't really know what to do, and so she goes on this work event, and throughout this event, she's thinking about Yuichi, and she ends up running into Eriko's old coworker, the one who owns the bar now, and she tells her that she needs to basically like go with Yuichi and like be with him, and she gives Mikage like his contact information, because we find out that Yuichi has gone to a hotel and has not been staying at his apartment. He hasn't been eating, he hasn't been contacting anybody, but this woman, she has his contact, and she gives all the information to Mikage. And so Mikage goes on her work event, and she's thinking about him this entire time. And then one night she goes out to eat katsudon, and as she's eating, she's eating and she's thinking about Yuichi, and she's like, he needs to eat this. And so she buys katsudon, and she takes a taxi all the way to him. It's like over like almost 2 hours to get to him in a crazy fare, and she gets him, she breaks into his like hotel room. It's really crazy. She climbs up a whole thing. It's crazy. And she goes into his room with him, and they connect. She gives him the food, and she makes him eat the food. And it's really, really, it's kind of very sweet. And then after that, let me see. I'm looking at my notes here. Yeah, after that, she leaves to go back to her like work thing far away, and as she's standing at the seawall, Yuichi comes up to her. He finds her, and he said he tracked her down, and he's calling her from Tokyo, and then she tells him that she's coming back tomorrow, and they talk some more, and Yuichi is very happy, obviously, and he says, I'm picking you up at the station tomorrow, what time are you getting in? And that's how it ends. And it's very, very sweet. I think this book is, or this story is very beautiful. I love Banana Yoshimoto, but I think that Kitchen is honestly one of my favorite stories I've read. It's very short, but very simple and sweet. And Mikage is such an interesting character. A lot of like the beginning of the book, she kind of talks about like indifference. And she talks about the indifference with which the world keeps turning in spite of personal tragedy. And she comments about, like, how lonely she is and how lonely it is to be human. And a lot of the book is kind of focused on, like, emotional isolation and stuff like that. There's some really, like, good quotes written down that I'll read out. Let me find. Oh, this is one of my favorite ones from the book. It says, life can be so hard, I said, moved. Yes, but if a person hasn't experienced true despair, she grows old never knowing how to evaluate where she is in life, never understanding what joy really is. I'm grateful for it. Yeah, and then there's another one. I think it's on page 20. That was on page 41. On page 21. Oh yeah, she says, I think Yuichi did it too. When I realized that on this truly dark and solitary path we all walk, the only way we can light is our own. Although I was raised with love, I was always lonely. Someday, without fail, everyone will disappear, scattered into the blackness of time. I've always lived with that knowledge rooted in my being. Perhaps that's why Yuichi's way of reacting to things seemed so natural to me. But yeah, I think Kitchen is a very beautiful story. I really, really, really liked it. I would say it's honestly one of my favorites. Yeah, very awesome. And then the second, like, the very last part of this book is another story. It's called Moonlight Shadow. Like I said in the beginning, this one is often, like, it's not really talked about. Like, I'd never see reviews about it. People only really talk about Kitchen, the other story. But Moonlight Shadow is a short story. It's super, super short. It's basically about the main character. Her name is Satsuki. And so we find out that a car accident killed her boyfriend, Hitoshi. And Hitoshi's brother, like, younger brother's girlfriend, Hirage, yeah. And so the story kind of follows Satsuki and Hitoshi's brother, and how they're like learning to like live without them and grieving. And so she, Satsuki, she starts to run to cope with her grief and her loss. So she becomes like a crazy runner. Like she's running all the time, stuff like that. While Hitoshi's brother starts to wear his girlfriend's uniform, like school uniform, to school and stuff like that. It's a really interesting, and she kind of, I feel like Benani Yoshimoto does a really interesting job of describing grief and like how people cope with things differently. But yeah, so Satsuki, she starts running. One day she's on a run and this woman appears. Her name, we find out, is Yurara. And she starts to talk to Satsuki and she tells her a life-changing special event is going to happen on the bridge that they're at right now. And she tells her to come back at like 4 a.m. to meet up with her, so they can see this. And so Satsuki doesn't really know who this woman is. They've never met each other. And she kind of thinks that this is weird, obviously. She doesn't know if she should believe her. But she's kind of like overcome with grief. And she's kind of looking for anything that she can to like cope, or to use to cope, I guess. And so she decides that she's gonna do what Yurara told her to do. And so one night she goes 4 a.m. on the bridge and she meets Yurara there. And they talk to each other for a little bit. And then finally she turns towards the bridge. And at the bridge, like kind of like a light starts to appear. And as she's looking, she sees Hitoshi, who was her dead boyfriend. And he doesn't say anything to her, but he kind of just like stares at her. And he's kind of moving his mouth around like he is saying something, but she can't hear anything. But she gets to see him and she starts to like cry and stuff like that. And we also find out that Yurara is faced with her loved one that she lost. I can't remember who it was to her, because I read this book quite a while ago. And so after that, like they see each other for a little while, they both, their loved ones start to like disappear, and then they're gone from the bridge. And Satsuki's obviously very emotional and crying, but she ends up finding peace with herself, and she ends up like moving on. Like she's able to move on now that she's seen Hitoshi. And same with like Yurara. And we also find out that Hitoshi's brother has also begun to move on and begun to accept everything, because Satsuki runs into him later on and discovers that he stopped wearing the uniform, his girlfriend's uniform, and he's starting to like become himself again. And so they both have like started to move on, and it's really interesting. And there's a quote from this book that I quite liked, and it's, as I grow older, much older, I will experience many things, and I will hit rock bottom again and again. Again and again, I will suffer. Again and again, I will get back up on my feet. I will not be defeated. I won't let my spirit be destroyed. But yeah, I really, really liked Moonlight Shadow, and it kind of makes me sad that people don't talk about it. I feel like it's a great story. Like I said, people only ever talk about Kitchen itself, that first half of the book. But this one's really, really good too. But yeah, Kitchen by Benani Yoshimoto. Like I said in the beginning of the show, I really, really love Benani Yoshimoto. I think she's one of my favorite authors. And she has a lot of books. Not all of her books have been translated into English. And I've only read a few of the ones that have. But like I said, I think she writes in a way that's really easy to understand. And she expresses like all of her ideas really, really well. And yeah, she talks, a lot of her books kind of focus on women, and grief, love, and like death. But I feel like this is a common, these are common themes in Japanese literature. I feel like death and loneliness and grief and stuff like that. If you've ever read Japanese literature, you'd probably understand what I'm talking about. A lot of Japanese authors use these same themes throughout their novels, which I really enjoy. I like Japanese literature a lot because of that. Russian literature is kind of similar, but they do it in different ways. But I know a lot of people don't like that. But yeah, I think Banana Yoshimoto, Miyako Kawakami are definitely two of the best people that do this. those are my goats. I love Miyako Kawakami, even though this episode is not about her. But yeah, Kitchen by Banana Yoshimoto. It's a super short read as well. I think it's only, let me see, like in total with both stories, it's only 150 pages. So I read this in like a day, a couple hours. It was super, super short. But yeah. Oh, so back to Moonlight Shadow. I wanted to read this really quickly. I kind of forgot about it, but we do have written what Hitoshi was saying to her. And so I'll read it out. Cause at the end of the story, Banana Yoshimoto writes out his like monologue, I guess. But it says, "I'll never be able to be here again. As the minutes slide by, I move on. The flow of time is something I cannot stop. I haven't a choice. I go. One caravan has stopped. Another starts up. There are people I have yet to meet. Others I'll never see again. People who are gone before you know it. People who are just passing through. Even as we exchange hellos, they seem to grow transparent. I must keep living with the flowing river before my eyes. I earnestly pray that a trace of my girl child self will always be with you. For waving goodbye, I thank you." Or, this isn't Hitoshi's thing. This is what... Sorry, I worded that wrong. This is what... not Mikage. Oh my god. Satsuki is telling Hitoshi. But yeah. I really love this book. I would give it maybe a 9 out of 10. I don't think any book is 100% perfect, so I won't give it a 10. But I do think it's an amazing, amazing book. It's her most popular book as well, and I can see why. But yeah, I'd highly recommend checking it out if you'd like, of course. Yeah, her other book, Dead End Memories, short stories, that one is pretty good as well. But it's definitely one of her lesser read books. I think another one, Moshi Moshi, is also pretty good. But yeah, I think we might read another Banana Yoshimoto book on this show. Not next week, though. Next week is, what book is it? I forgot right now. Let me look this up. I pre-picked all the books a while ago, so. We're reading Angela Davis, her book Women, Race, and Class next week for the show, so stay tuned for that if you'd like. The next couple weeks of this show, we're gonna focus a lot on, like, I guess, like, feminism, things like that. We're gonna, especially in South Korea soon, we're gonna read a book that's kind of known for starting a feminist movement in South Korea in like 2 or 3 weeks, I think. But yeah, stay tuned for that if you'd like. Like I said, this book is really short, so today's episode's kind of short, but I'll be back in two weeks. Yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. In the background of every single show is Guts' Berserk theme, if you know, I don't know. But yeah, I'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye!
Look out now. This is the Diz. Dizzy Gillespie, that is. And let me give you some information. If you want to hear some good sounds, the sounds that's round, keep your radio tuned to KDVS in Davis, 90.3 on your FM dial. Look out! Ow! This is the Diz signing off.
Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning into your local campus and community radio station. On today's radio show, we have one guest who's here in the studio, and she is an old friend of this radio show and of mine. Leslie Madsen is in the house. Leslie Madsen is a UC Davis alumna who earned her MA in creative writing and PhD in cultural studies right here at the University of California, Davis. She is now the statewide manager of the Oregon State University Extension Master Gardener Program, and we'll be talking about a variety of topics. They may include, though there are no promises, AI, zigzagging careers, reinvention, liberal arts, poetry, and Margaret Atwood. So keep it right here for an extended conversation with Leslie Madsen on this week's edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back.